This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 146.
Not every company is going to be right for every employee, and not every employee is going to be right for every company. And if you as a company optimize for making everyone happy, then you are going to have a pretty shoddy culture because you're not going to have an actual culture. You're just going to be a culture of how do I make everyone happy versus these are our values, these are our philosophies, either it works for you or it doesn't. One of our core values is embracing feedback. That means not only being open to receiving feedback, but also having the courage to put your name to feedback. And so what we have found is that by putting your name to it, our employees are much more thoughtful in their feedback, and it's much more useful. We can actually action on it versus getting a bunch of anonymous feedback. We don't know where it's coming from. We don't know who's saying it. The feedback was so vague that we don't even know how to action on it. Now we're chasing down the wrong rabbit hole. At Athena, we just fundamentally believe if you're going to get feedback, you put your name to it.
How can you build your brand on LinkedIn while being true to who you are? Why should you be transparent about performance expectations with new hires? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. If you're really serious about becoming a more business-focused and strategic HR leader, then you need to make attending my Next Gen HR Accelerator program a part of your 2025 development plan. And if you're a CHRO who wants your HR team to have even more influence and business impact, then you're going to want to send your team to my Next Gen HR Accelerator program as well. Because my Next Gen HR Accelerator program is a best-in-class leadership development program specifically designed to equip high-potential HR talent with the skills, mindset, and tools they need to become strategic business leaders and value creators. Over four intensive weeks, you'll build your business acumen and financial acumen. You'll sharpen your strategic thinking, elevate your executive influence and communication skills, and learn how to translate business strategy to HR initiatives that deliver impact and value. You'll also get targeted feedback and coaching to help you grow as a leader. As every Next Gen HR Accelerator participant receives 360 feedback, personal coaching from me, and leaves with a targeted from-to development plan. That is why one past participant said the Next Gen HR Accelerator program completely transformed their approach to HR. Over the past year, over 100 HR leaders have been through the program from companies like Verizon, McDonald's, Nike, Prudential, Pacific Life, Hershey, Kohler, and many more. Our next cohort starts September 9th and registration is now open. Space is limited and we expect to sell out. To learn more about the Next Gen HR Accelerator program, go to futureofhr.com or reach out to me directly to learn more. And with that, my guest this week is Melanie Naranjo. Melanie is the Chief People Officer at Athena, a scalable, all-inclusive compliance platform featuring a customizable training library, HR case manager, and a phishing simulator. With more than a decade of experience in HR, she's been interviewed by Fast Company, NBC, and the Wall Street Journal for her unique HR insights and strategies. Melanie also runs a monthly virtual workshop geared towards educating HR professionals on low-lift, practical strategies that work. And over the past few years, Melanie has also built an incredible following of over 60,000 HR professionals on LinkedIn, where she is known for her authentic posts and spicy takes. She's a graduate of Harvard University and a self-proclaimed cat lady. And whether you work at a startup, a big corporation, or somewhere in the middle, Melanie's real-life experiences will give you practical ideas and new ways to think about HR's business impact. And in my conversation with Melanie today, we discussed what it's like to lead HR at an HR tech company and why Melanie recommends the experience to other HR professionals, how she built her personal brand on LinkedIn to over 60,000 followers by being authentic and real, Melanie's advice on how to effectively partner with your CEO to drive the business forward, how being transparent about high performance expectations and consequences for poor performance creates a culture of clarity and trust, and how learning in public promotes accountability and builds community. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Melanie. Melanie, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
Hello, hello. I'm good. Excited to be here with you. Looking forward to the weekend. Looking forward to my birthday next month. I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, I love that. I'm doing great. I am looking forward to the weekend as well. I didn't know it was your birthday. I'll now look forward to that and hopefully celebrate that on social probably more than anything else.
Yeah, fair.
You are really in a unique position. You are Chief People Officer for Athena, which puts you in a small group of HR leaders who also happen to work in HR tech. It gives you this unique vantage point because you are an HR leader inside a company that sells and does a product for HR leaders, and you're kind of a customer at the same time you're also can be an evangelist. So what's it like to be leading HR at an HR tech company?
I'll start by saying that I could not recommend it enough. I think every HR person, if you ever get a chance in your career, please, please take this opportunity. It is the most unique, most fun, fastest learning opportunity I've ever had in my career, in particular because it has just forced me to think about my role in HR and the business so much more differently than I ever have before, in particular because I have the ability to help directly impact revenue, which understandably most HR people don't. It's been amazing. I'll share more specifics. One, it means that I have to be really truly excited about the thing that my company is building, whereas oftentimes you can do HR in any company. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to be excited about the product that your company is building or whatever it is that your company is doing. And then the other thing is that my experience in HR is so high value, not just from an internal perspective, as in how can we help our employees, but from an external perspective, as in how can we help our customers? How can we better target and sell to our buyer? I feel so uniquely positioned to be instrumental to the company in a way that I never have before. And that is so much fun. I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I was starting to get a little bit burnt out, I'll be honest, when it comes to HR prior to coming to Athena. I was thinking, I'm not sure if I can do HR for that much longer. And coming to Athena has just re-energized me because I get to have a piece of this very creative pie that I never have before and that is really pushing me to flex and grow in different ways.
Oh, that's awesome to hear that. It's great that you feel re-energized by being in Athena. And you talking a little bit about being tied to revenue. We'll talk more about your role in a minute, but what have you learned? Did your business acumen go up? Did you now say, hey, let's take the P&L differently because you are selling to HR leaders and they're like, hey, you can help us because you understand what an HR leader wants out of their compliance training and everything else you guys do?
1,000%. And I'll acknowledge that at the beginning, this was not an opportunity I took advantage of. I just sort of did that traditional, like, well, that's not my responsibility. That's a sales thing or that's a marketing thing. I'm going to stop listening now and focus on the HR side of things. And then when I realized, well, no, I need to know these things, then it was overwhelming. But now it's really great and exciting. Absolutely. I understand things like MQL generation and making sure that we're not generating enough pipeline, then our sales leaders can't hit their quotas, right? Like just understanding how the different parts of the business work together. I thought I knew, I didn't know, is the reality. And I have all the empathy in the world for any other HR leader out there who thinks they know the business, but realizes they don't know the business. I'm sure in a year's time, I'll come back and I'll be like, JP, I don't know what I was talking about. I clearly still didn't know the business, but I know more today than I did 4 years ago, certainly. And I'm keenly aware of our ARR goals. If we're on target, I'm keenly aware of, oh, shoot, if we're not on track, that actually means we have less money to hire people. So slow your roll. We need to pull back on our job recs right now. Or we need to slow down the recruitment process. Those are pieces of the puzzle that I think I was peripherally aware of in the past, but now I'm truly aware of where I don't have to wait on my CEO to say something. I can see the numbers and know for myself that I need to bring this up because I can see that we're going to have to change something on the people side pretty soon. It has absolutely improved my business acumen.
You guys are more of a startup. How old are you now? How many years?
That's a great question. I think we're closing in on 7 years. 7 years?
Perfect.
Yeah.
About enough.
That. Yeah.
You're not a massive HR tech company yet. You're growing. But what's nice when you are in a smaller company like you are in a startup, you are closer to it, right? And you can see those sales and you're like, that really made a difference. And I think sometimes as you get into bigger Fortune 500 companies, it gets harder to see the impact, whereas you know you're having an impact with what you're doing. So I think it's great. And I love that your business acumen and just you're feeling that connection to the business and you didn't burn out and leave HR. That would have been really been a shame based on all you've done over the last few years.
Oh, thank you so much. That's very sweet of you to say.
And over the last few years, you have done a lot. You've actually built this really strong following, a little bit jealous, just teasing. I think you got over 60,000 followers. I didn't look today, but you've got a lot. You're like, it's a lot. That's a lot of people. But I think I understand you were kind of hesitant when you started to post at first. In fact, you were just kind of like, I don't know if I want to be posting. So what changed for you and how did you start to build this professional presence on LinkedIn?
Yeah, it's a fair question. And if it makes you feel any better, before I joined Athena, I kid you not, I had, I think it was something like 800 followers. That's just a little over 3 years ago. And I had only ever made, I think, 3 LinkedIn posts and they were all, hey, we're hiring. You are correct that I really struggled on social media. The reason I started posting is because, as we were talking about previously, I'm in this unique position to help positively impact revenue, given that a large chunk of our buyer is my network. Roxanne and I, my CEO, had been talking about, well, like, should you start posting? Would that be helpful? I don't know. And I remember the first post ever that I wanted to make. It was a very simple thing. I went back and forth. I went to the lawyer. I went to our CEO. I was like, is this right? Did I get every word perfect? What if somebody gets upset about this word? Like, when I tell you that I overthought it so much, and it was so, and I look back on that post and it was so tame. I don't know what I was nervous about. It's scary because in HR, for a lot of us, for a good majority of our careers, we have been trained to be risk mitigators. And putting yourself public on social media is not a great way to mitigate risk, let's be real. And also, I'll say something tough that I don't think enough HR professionals talk about. There are a lot of employees out there that don't like me. There are a lot of employees out there who've had a bad experience with me, not because I'm a bad HR person, but because I was there on the day that they got fired. I was there when we had to run an investigation. I was there during a very difficult time in their lives. And while I'm sure I'm not perfect, and I'm sure there are things that I could have done better, certainly me from 6 years ago is not me from today. For the most part, it wasn't even that I did anything bad. It's just that I was there during a very understandably tough time for these people. I always have in the back of my mind, what if I say something that sets someone off? What if I say something and now people talk about something publicly that I don't want to be made public? What if people start attacking me personally? It's very important to me that I keep my personal and my work life separate, especially being in HR. That was where some of the fear came from. But I'll jump to the punchline and say, you learn very quickly that it's actually not as scary as you think it is, but you only learn that by doing. Very luckily, my CEO just kept saying, keep going, keep posting. Stop sending it to me for review. I trust you. And the more reps that I did, the more that I was able to see, okay, no one's canceling me. No one's out to get me. Also, let's be real, it's LinkedIn. People don't want to put their own careers at risk by being unprofessional in what they write to you. So if there's any social media platform out there that is somewhat not scary, it's LinkedIn. Like, go post on LinkedIn. It's going to be okay.
That's great advice. Well, I love the fact that you just kind of kept at it. One of the things that are great about your posts is they're very personable. You feel you coming through and your perspectives, which sometimes are spicy takes, which we're going to get to a little bit later. I think that's the reason why you've just done so well. I think you've always hit that chord and resonate with, like you said, not everyone's going to like us in HR. We are there in tough time. That would be the same for any HR person that have ever been on the podcast, myself included. Not always going to like what we have to do in our jobs, right? We're the messenger and, you know, et cetera. But I did want to ask you, because you've done so well and you really embraced it, what advice do you have for next gen HR leaders who want to build a personal brand on LinkedIn?
I'm going to start with what I think you shouldn't do. I'm not trying to call anyone out. That's why I'm not using any names. And I also want to approach with empathy and say that I understand why someone would do this. But I personally do not recommend leading with intentionally divisive language. Let me be clear. What I am not saying is that you shouldn't have a spicy take, that you shouldn't stand strong in your opinion. What I am saying is that I think sometimes in an effort to get more attention, people will say something that they actually don't even really stand by if you put it to the test, right? They'll be like, no, of course, I meant it in a more nuanced way. Of course, you don't apply this in all situations. I just find it to be harmful. And yeah, maybe you'll get one or two posts that go viral, but that's not going to build a long-term following, and that's not going to build credibility. And also, quite frankly, and maybe this doesn't matter to you, it matters to me though, I want to stand by everything that I say, and I want my LinkedIn post to be a true depiction of who I am and my work philosophies. Jumping into what I think you should do, it depends what you're trying to achieve, what the blockers you have are, right? Like if you're nervous that your company will be upset about it, or if you're just not a good writer, or whatever the case may be. Obviously, the advice would be different, but high level things I'd say is don't overcomplicate it. If you thought of a good thing, if you heard a good thing, just put it out there. Because I find that the biggest blocker is people of all kinds just thinking that nobody cares about what I have to say. And more often than not, they do. Not even necessarily because what you've said is super innovative, but because it touches a chord. And people like feeling a sense of community. And so many people out there feel alone. And to see somebody else voice their innermost thoughts that they have been sitting on is really validating and powerful for people. The other thing is, you don't have to say everything in a single post. That was something that held me back the most early on. I worried that if I say this, but I don't say that, then people will fill in the blanks with assumptions that I didn't mean. And I've actually found that not only is that impossible to hit every angle in a single LinkedIn post with a character limit, it's also damaging to the conversations that could come from it. I actually now optimize for leaving a few things unsaid so that people in the comments can share their own opinions, build their own conversations, and fill in the blanks where I left them in the post. And the third thing I would say is write what feels true to you and what feels interesting to you. Don't focus on what is the biggest buzzword. What are other people posting? I hear a lot of people sort of researching what other people do or what's going viral for them. I think that misses a lot of context. It's probably going viral for them for a myriad of reasons, not just the topic, but the language with which they wrote it, the context of their network, the context of something that happened in the news that day. I have personally found that that has not been either a winning or a fun strategy for me. I really just write what feels interesting to me. If it's interesting to you, it's probably interesting to somebody else, and it will be more fun and organic. Those are probably the three pieces of advice I'd offer.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And I think your point on if you see something that's interesting to you and resonates, then put it out there. Don't overcomplicate it. I also think just having a goal, like if your goal is to try to be a LinkedIn influencer or whatever, I'm just going to tell you, please get a job. It's very hard to make money doing this. Okay. No one's making money. I don't make money in the podcast. It's a passion project. It truly is. Sure, I've started a company now, but when you post, it's because you want to post. It's interesting to you. And I also think it's a good opportunity to explore, to your point, what's other people's perspectives. Like that's the idea, start a conversation. So you might be just kind of learning, posting things and say, hey, does this work? Do people care about this right now? I think that part's really interesting, but being authentic and being true to you is the key. I really think that's your secret to your success. Is just, I think that is just Melanie coming through on a post and people go, oh, that's great. And I really resonate, right? Like I'm expecting now to see a post about the fact that some people hate us in HR. I think that's a post that people would actually...
Honestly, that would go
pretty viral if you haven't written that one yet.
Because let's make it happen. It's now okay. On the schedule.
It's on the schedule. Now I want to go back a little bit. You talked about your CEO, Roxanne, who I've met and she's terrific. You guys have a new podcast coming out. So we'll definitely link to that in the notes. You talked about when you first got there, you're okay, my job's HR. Cool. And then pretty quickly, somehow they realized, or you realized, or Roxanne realized that, hey, you could add a lot more value. Do you want to kind of get in this game and be a more of a business leader with us? How did that all come about? Tell us the story. And were you kicking and screaming, or was it a little bit easier than that?
This is always an interesting one because I find that people are surprised when I tell them the truth. They think that either it was a part of our grand plan all along, or Roxanne and I have maybe been friends before, and from the start, it was as it is today. And the reality is it wasn't. And I say that hopefully to give hope to other people that you have the power to change the dynamic at your workplace, and also hopefully to build empathy for yourself and for your leadership team. The way that we started at Athena was I was hired to do HR. Like most founder CEOs, my boss, Roxanne, who's amazing and wonderful and the best boss I've ever had, was under the impression that HR was just risk mitigation and administration, payroll, benefits, and then, you know, if we have to like fire someone or performance manage someone, like you do that, right? And for the record, she's not alone. And I don't judge her. She's never done HR before, even though we are a compliance training company, and even though she has always felt a strong passion for culture and process. And so those were things that were already in place when I joined. But this idea of HR still felt different, right? That felt like payroll, benefits. When I joined, that's really what I was tasked with. And I was working off in my own little bubble while Roxanne worked on the business. What was interesting, and I truly don't think Roxanne will mind me sharing this, I think we've publicly talked about this. And also, we're very big on learning in public because we find that it forces us to hold ourselves accountable. And we also find it's a great way to build network and community. It all comes back to that relatability. What happened was Roxanne asked me to promote a couple of pieces of content that our company had put together. And I didn't like it. And I just told her in the most polite way possible, I want to help. But to be honest, I wouldn't put my name to this. This isn't the advice that I would give. Honestly, all the kudos to Roxanne because she did not take it personally at all. She was like, oh, if you can do it better, then please do and give it to us. And then that's what we'll post. And I was like, me? You want me to write a piece of content? I was thrilled. I was nervous, but I did it. And slowly but surely, these content pieces went viral. And to be honest, in retrospect, obviously, it's not surprising. A marketing person has a ton of skills, and I am in such deep admiration of our marketing team, but a marketer is not an HR person. So of course, it's going to be a little bit harder for them to write in a more relatable way to HR and also to identify the pain points that the average HR person is facing at any point. What's interesting to me, honestly, out of all of this is I've talked to plenty of HR tech companies at this point because obviously we're all in the same field or industry, and not enough people are leveraging their HR partners, in my opinion, their internal HR. And I think it's a really missed opportunity. And you can tell in the marketing because the marketing is very high level. It's very surface level. And when they do a webinar, the moderator is maybe a marketing person. And so they're not able to give and take and play as much with the panelists, which again is a shame. I think it's a missed opportunity. But I understand that if there isn't someone who has the confidence and psychological safety to say, hey, the marketing we're putting out there, I wouldn't download it. Then of course, your CEO, your marketing team, they're not going to know because HR is not speaking up.
Yeah, I think it's so great that Roxanne took that the right way. But also, to your point, the best marketing is from your customers. You know the market. You're like, I am the customer. I know just intuitively what's going to connect with people. I've been in HR. I've sat in the seat. I think, frankly, that's one reason why the podcast has been pretty successful in general. I'm like, yes, I actually still consider myself an HR person, even though I'm not in that seat today, right? I've been there. I've done that. And it's a massive difference. It's just a massive difference.
1,000%. You know which things to push on further. You know which topics are gobbledygook, like corporate language doesn't resonate. You know the things. Yeah.
Yeah, I do think you're right. HR tech should do more of that. I'm often surprised that I don't see more, I guess. There are a few that come to mind. I won't go down the list. But I do think there are a few that do it well. There's some that you can tell that the HR is not as engaged as they should be. So they should be stealing your playbook. Now, one post you wrote, and I know obviously we are talking about Roxanne, so we should leave her alone a little bit. We should have brought her to the podcast next time she'll come on.
Next time. She would have a lot to say, I'm sure.
She does. And I think you have a great relationship with her, but it's not perfect, right? You are still a CHRO, CEO relationship.
Yeah.
And I think you wrote some posts around how do you figure out what's motivating your CEO? How do you get at the heart of what really matters to an executive when sometimes they can't fully articulate themselves. And you had some great tips around that. So I'd love for you to talk a little more about how do you do that or how you've been doing that with Roxanne or in general.
Yeah, it requires work on both our ends. I'll put that out there. If one party is not willing to partner up, then it's going to be a little bit harder. It doesn't mean it's impossible, but it'll be a little bit harder. So I do want to give Roxanne all the credit for being so receptive to all the things that I ask and do and all of that. Where I always recommend that people start is just try and get inside your CEO's head. Don't try and convince them of anything to begin with. There's a term that I really hate. It's a common one. I really hate the term influence without authority, right? Or how can HRBPs exhibit more influence? I don't think the goal is influence, right? The goal, in my opinion, is driving the business forward, right? And if you are trying to influence your CEO to do something that is not driving the business forward, then you are ultimately missing the plot. So for me, my goal has never been how do I influence and convince and like manipulate Roxanne to do what I want to do and to prioritize HR above all else. That's for me as a business leader, which an HR person is, right? You are on the leadership team. It would be foolish of me, in my opinion, to try and convince her to prioritize HR. The HR is not the priority. The business is the priority. And I believe that that is true of all department heads. Start with basic questions. What are your top three priorities right now? What is eating up the most of your time, bandwidth, energy, anxiety? And when you think of your partnership with me, what about it is driving you bonkers? I come to you and quite frankly, you're like, Melanie, you're distracting me and you are missing the point. And what are examples of times when I've come to you and you're like, yes, that. If you can't think of any examples of me that I've done that, who on the team has done that? And who should I talk to? Who has done a fantastic job of building a case argument? Who is the person that when every time they reach out, you drop what you're doing because you really care to listen to what they have to say? I just soak that all up. And then I find a way to partner up, right? If her priorities are X, Y, and Z, and I'm coming to her with things that have nothing to do with that, it's a waste of both our times. Because at the end of the day, she's the CEO. It's not my company, it's her company, to be clear. It is not to say that if I see a big blaring problem, I should not say something. Of course I should. But if it's not actually actively broken or about to cause an explosion, I need to be prioritizing whatever she's prioritizing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hear your point on influence. And I think there's lots of books and people talk about influence without authority. And I don't think it's manipulation as much as is, I like to take it from the point of view of like, well, how can you be more influential? Which means you understand the business better. You understand your stakeholders. You understand that business leader, what really keeps them up at night, the big things they're working on, where their anxiety is coming from, everything you said. And then how do you figure out how can I help solve those problems? And that's what real influence is, because you're like, I want to bring you into the tent to do that. You cannot manipulate someone. And my favorite saying is that people do things for their reasons, not yours. And I never forget that, especially having teenagers.
Honestly, I love the way that you framed that. And I think that's exactly right. As long as you're interpreting that in the way that it, I think, is meant to be, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think where I get concerned is, in full transparency, I've just talked to so many HR professionals who believe that it's their job to convince their CEO to care about employee happiness more than anything, or care about HR more than the business. And if that is truly what you think your job is, I think you probably have to have a bigger conversation with your entire leadership team around what the function is of HR within their company and if that is in fact how they want you to be performing.
Yeah, that's so well said. And I do think sometimes HR, we kind of want to overstep. I mean, if you want to make the final call, then go be a business leader and not be the HR leader. Our job, and we've had multiple podcast guests that have said this, but Matt Breitfelder and Tim Richman from Apollo and AbbVie has said it both their own way. Matt Breitfelder says we should have no agenda in HR. Our agenda is the CEO's agenda. It's the organization's agenda. What Tim would say is that he has two goals. Number one, that the company's successful and that his leaders are successful. And that's it. Never doubt those two rules. And they're brilliant rules. And I think every HR leader should follow that. And if you're following that rule, then you're not trying to push your new program. You're trying to do what's right for the business. And hopefully the new program is right for the business, right?
I think that's exactly right. And it makes me think a lot about, as I've become more integrated with the business and become more aware of things like, are reps hitting quota? Is the marketing team generating enough pipeline? I have found new ways to support the business from the people perspective. I used to spend a lot of time thinking about HR in a silo and looking at our engagement survey scores and thinking, oh gosh, they're low and I need to spend the whole quarter trying to get them higher. But now I use the engagement survey as a pulse check and data to help me make more informed decisions when I am building people strategies geared towards pushing the business forward. If, for example, I see that our sales reps have missed quota for the past two quarters,
I'm not going to say, well, sounds like a sales problem. I'll be over here doing, I don't know, engagement survey and a pizza party. I'm going to go talk to all the leaders and try to understand what the underlying issue is. And maybe I'll find that the underlying issue is the product leaders and the sales leaders are not playing nice with each other, or there is not enough communication between the product leaders and the engineers. And so the roadmap keeps getting pushed off. Those are all people problems, right? And so I can partner with the leadership team to help build better cross-functional collaboration, to help build better communication across the company, to help build better processes in our work ethic, in our philosophy, in our company values. Those are all people problems. And I don't think enough people realize that.
Yeah. And I love that you're saying they're people problems, but actually they're business problems that we're going to solve through people, right? We're going to fix those. When you start to know the business more, you can get into that. And to your point, there's lots of reasons why maybe we miss sales quota, and how can you help support that versus like, I'm going to go look at the engagement scores again. So that's brilliant. It's a great example. All right, let's shift gears a little bit and get into some spicy takes, because, and we don't have a lot of spicy takes in the podcast, so maybe I need to do this more. And we'll see if people ping me and say, yeah, JP, let's have a spicy take every week. But one of your spicy takes, Melanie, is that you believe organizations should tell employees on day one what it looks like to get let go for poor performance. So on day one, hey, we're going to tell you what it's like to get let go at Athena for poor performance. Tell us more about this, frankly, and how do new hires respond? How did you guys get to this place?
Yeah, it's a great question. And for the record, obviously, as with all things, we always approach with more nuance. We always approach with all the empathy in the world. And the context is so critical. It's not like, hello, by the way, let me tell you what it will look like when you get fired. It's part of a broader discussion around our performance culture and values at the company. One of our values is playing to win. Another of our values is embracing feedback. As we're talking about our values, and then as we're talking about our performance standards, which are quite high, right? We pay top of market because we expect top of market performance. And so as we're talking about all of this, a lot of times what I think employers miss is this is what high performance looks like. They don't talk about what low performance looks like or how you will know if you are underperforming. We don't want there to be uncertainty. We want there to be transparency from the beginning, not as a scare tactic. I want to be abundantly clear there. I think that many people could hear this and think, ooh, this is like one of those cutthroat environments where it's a scare tactic to see who can hack it. That's not our intent. Our intent is we want to make sure, one, that you are not needlessly spiraling, which happens to a lot of overachievers. You get one piece of constructive feedback and you think your job is at risk and you're a terrible employee. The other is we want to set you up for success. And part of setting you up for success means making sure that you are well aware as soon as there's a performance issue so that you have a meaningful opportunity to turn things around versus we don't tell you anything, you're not aware that this is a high risk, and then you lose your job and you never had the opportunity to ask the right questions, to reset expectations, to understand what the underlying issue was. Our approach is always, hey, here are our performance standards. And by the way, our commitment to you is that we will always be honest and upfront with you about how you're performing. And if at any point you do start to underperform, here's our commitment to you. Our commitment is that we're going to be transparent with you. We will give you the feedback. We will tell you what success looks like, and we will partner with you. But if we are partnering with you and we see over the course of 1, 2, 3 months that the level of progress necessary to maintain this role either isn't happening or things are getting worse, then the truth is that we are going to have to part ways. Let me pause. What questions do you have? What about that makes you nervous? How can I better set you up for success here before I send you on your way to meet with your manager? It's a very kind conversation, but it's also a very honest and direct conversation.
Yeah, well, I think it's great you're framing that in terms of your entire performance culture. And of course, it does sound spicy if you would just go right to like, hey, you're going to get let go on your first day. There's been some famous companies. Zappos was one where I think they're trained and say, hey, if you want to leave, you can leave now. We'll pay you basically to leave versus being a wrong fit. But I think you're right. It's good to kind of say, look, we are a high performance culture. You're going to get a lot of feedback. That's how it's going to work, to lay that out. And hopefully people kind of step up. Have you seen positive benefits from that? And people saying, hey, I really appreciate that. Maybe later on who weren't performing saying, you know what, gosh, hey, sorry, Melanie, but I don't think I can cut it here. I'm not sure this is the right place for me. Have you seen it play out?
It's played out fine. And the reason why is because we're upfront about this as early as the interview process. If this is not the culture that is right for you, you're going to know in the interview process. And we think that's pretty important because we would rather that you self-select out before you join the company than after you join the company, which for the record, if someone opts out after they've joined, I do think that's on the employer. Like, you didn't do a good enough job of being clear about what the culture was and what the expectations would be. And I also want to be clear and say, I think it's okay if in the interview process people opt out. I actually think that's a good thing. Roxanne always talks about this. I can't remember her wording exactly, but the sort of meaning is, not every company is going to be right for every employee, and not every employee is going to be right for every company. And if you as a company optimize for making everyone happy, then you are going to have a pretty shoddy culture because you're not going to have an actual culture. You're just going to be a culture of how do I make everyone happy versus these are our values, these are our philosophies, either it works for you or it doesn't.
Yeah, I like to think about having a culture that's magnetic, that really attracts people and also repels. Yeah, so I think that's a great way you're thinking about that. All right, one more spicy take. This one I think is kind of spicy. I'm interested to hear more about this from you. You've taken a pretty bold stance against anonymous feedback, even on surveys. What's your reasoning behind this and how has that approach worked in practice? And I think some HR people right now are like, what? Wait, surveys, they're not anonymous? Tell us more about it.
Totally. And I will always caveat this as a compliance company with, of course, our hotline allows for anonymity. That's a different thing. We will always allow anonymous reports from employees. That is not what we are discussing here. That's off the table for discussion, right? You must allow anonymous reporting. But from a culture survey reporting perspective, one of our core values is embracing feedback. That means not only being open to receiving feedback, but also having the courage to put your name to feedback. If we put out surveys and people didn't participate because they felt uncomfortable putting their name to feedback, that would tell us two things. One, we as a company need to fix this problem, right? Like, we have not created a culture that enables people to give feedback, that creates the psychological safety needed to give feedback. There's something structurally incorrect. And or two, we did a poor job in the recruitment process of hiring people who are aligned with this value set. For us, if you're not going to put your name to feedback, then to be honest, you probably shouldn't be saying it at the company. Let me be more specific there. I find that when you allow anonymous feedback, understandably, people apply a bit less rigor to their feedback. They are less specific. They approach with a more simplistic two-dimensional perspectives as opposed to thinking about, how will this land? Is this productive or is this me venting? Have I taken ownership? Have I ever said something about this before? And so what we have found is that by putting your name to it, our employees are much more thoughtful in their feedback and it's much more useful. We can actually action on it versus getting a bunch of anonymous feedback. We don't know where it's coming from. We don't know who's saying it. The feedback was so vague that we don't even know how to action on it. Now we're chasing down the wrong rabbit hole. At Athena, we just fundamentally believe if you're going to give feedback, you put your name to it. And if you're going to put your name to it, you're going to be thoughtful about it. And then we can action on it. If that's not the kind of company culture that you are okay with, fine, no hard feelings. But that means Athena is probably not the right place for you.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting and progressive take on it. I think it makes a lot of sense for your culture, your company, your CEO, and probably your entire leadership team. I have seen other companies and have worked with CEOs that anonymous surveys are like, I want to know who said that. Find this person. It's not psychologically safe. That is one of these big challenges. But you're right. If people should be able to own up to it. And we've all seen engagement surveys where we're like, okay, who fired this missile? But like, I want to talk to this person. Like, this is a big deal. We could solve this, but yet I don't know who said it. And then it becomes, now we have to go do focus groups. I think it's actually interesting. I think not every company can pull it off, but I think it sounds like it's really working for Athena and I like it.
I think that's exactly right. I was leading a training session the other day with a bunch of HR leaders and they brought this up too, which is, and I totally agree, it's important to understand the context of any HR strategy, any strategy at all. Certainly, what I wouldn't want people to walk away from this conversation with is, Melanie says that this is what we should do across all companies and I'm going to do this. Oh, and it didn't work. Of course not. It's all company specific. And that's why it's so important that you start with the business goals. what are you as a business trying to achieve? And what is the best approach for you as a business? And is that feasible for you? This approach would probably flop miserably at another company. And so it's really, really important that people apply that analytical thinking to any other person's strategies and take it more as sort of something that provokes thought and introspection versus this is the rule or this is the one way to HR.
Yeah, there's an asterisk on our conversation here, Melanie, which is your results may and likely will vary from what you've gotten in Athena, right? Please don't think that you're going to be able to apply any HR strategy to your company and it's going to be the exact same. All right, last question for you, Melanie. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
All right, if I'm being really honest, the answer is probably panic. But if I'm being optimistic, the answer will be adaptability. But I think there is going to be a lot of panic and stress in the HR world over the next couple of years.
Wow. All right. Panic and stress. And then, of course, we'll go with adaptability. But that's the first time I've had that. It's probably a very honest answer. There's a lot coming in this world. We have definitely entered just unprecedented times. It's like almost overused. But I think with AI and everything that's coming, I can see how HR leaders feel panicked. But I think adaptable is where we'll end up, hopefully. So, Melanie, this was a great conversation. Thank you for being so authentic. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Same here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Melanie for offering such great insights on how HR leaders can build a personal brand and partner with their CEO to drive business growth. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, I think you're going to enjoy my Future of HR newsletter, which is the only newsletter that's focused on helping you to elevate your career and business impact. Go to futureofhr.com and subscribe. And be sure to download my HR Leaders Blueprint, which is 18 pages of real-world advice from 100-plus HR thought leaders with simple, actionable, and proven strategies to advance your career. Now, next week, due to the U.S. holiday and the 4th of July, we will not have a new guest. Instead, we'll feature one of our most downloaded episodes, and that's our Best of 2024 episode, which highlights 16 don't-miss moments from HR executives and thought leaders. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.